With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And now on, more trouble off the ball. Keegan involved again. And this is just what English football did not want to see.
Oh, we don't like to see that. Is often the first thing you'll hear a commentator say when a fight breaks out on a football pitch. But let's be honest, it simply isn't true. We love it.
Look at this, is a kick from Amavi on Kazawa. They're going to have to pick the bones out of this.
We can't get enough of opposing players swinging punches at each other, managers squaring up, and even the benches getting involved in a good old ruck.
There are people off the bench trying to pull the players apart. If you ever doubted the intensity of the rivalry here, because maybe for 75 minutes it was a football match, then it became a feud.
There have been many famous fights throughout the years. Kieran Dyer versus Lee Bowyer.
Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer are having a fight! Goodness me, what on earth is going on?
Alex Ferguson versus a slice of pizza.
Just was one of the first ones to run into a tunnel, and I had a pizza.
Diego Maradona versus an entire Athletic Bilbao team.
De Maradona con varios jugadores del Athletic de Bilbao. Ha llegado ahora Miguel y le ha golpeado. También Clos sobre.
And they live long in the memory because they're amazing. So we will not be pretending they aren't. They can erupt at any time and in any way. Paolo Di Canio pushed over a referee.
I don't know what's gone through his mind. You know, he's totally lost it for a split second.
Eric Cantona took it to a fan.
Oh, what's going on here? Cantona's getting involved with some supporters. Oh, this is outrageous.
And Eden Hazard had it out with a ball boy.
It's no wonder that the Swansea players are angered by that.
Because nobody is safe from a sudden eruption of needle. And it's exactly what we want to see. Dear listeners, today we woke up and chose violence. So let's get ready to rumble, because this is the Football Rambles guide to football fights. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Oh, here we are, gentlemen. Here we are.
Finally.
Ooh.
We got a chance to do fighting. Took ages to get them to let us do this.
What day is this going out? Wednesday?
Yeah. Wednesday.
I can't remember all the rest.
Wednesday night's all right.
What for the teenagers?
I get tired by the end of all of the Saturdays and I forget where it actually goes after
it's
that.
It's the climax of the
It's
of the
punching.
Song.
It's kicking.
It's Jason punching.
When footballers are involved, it's usually just really high kicks.
1973, that song came out.
Then it's a classic.
Still fresh classic. In the memory.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I'd like to ask this to kick us off. What classifies a fight for you in football, and what are the key ingredients to make it a good fight?
Well, going back to the kicks, as Pete was saying, that's very much a South American phenomenon. The problem is, with football fights, if there is a problem, is there's a lot of just pushing in the chest.
Yeah.
That, to me, is... a confrontation.
It's a melee.
It's not a fight. No, it's not a melee.
Much worse.
Yeah. Melee's like the goal-mouse scramble of fights.
Oh, okay, right.
I think I can establish a few parameters for you guys because I was thinking about this.
Go on, then.
I think we have to understand a couple of things. Now, Andy's touched on one of them. But the first, and I'll come to that. But the first one is the rules and the parameters and the threshold for a fight in the football world is very, very different to the real world.
Yes.
In the real world, the threshold's very high.
And it's also horrible to see in the real world.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Whereas in the football world, come on.
It's part of the theatre.
Because no one really is going to get hurt.
And so a little bit of shoving, pushing your head into someone else, a little bit of argy-bargy
on the bench. A head push, really.
Yeah.
It's not a headbutt.
They count as fights in the football world because the football world is a lot more sanitised.
Mm. Yeah.
And the second thing I would say, Andy alluded to it, the kicking. He's right to say that that happens a lot in South America. But I think it makes perfect sense that you see a lot more kicking because they're the tools. They're the weapons that the players are used to using.
The studs as well. You put your studs up, people go, okay.
Yeah.
It's more reach as well.
But they're going to be much more powerful with their feet than they are with their hands.
Of course they are.
Because they work with their feet every day.
Yeah, but you don't want to get your feet hurt. Again, it has to be stud them. You get the studs there. You don't lace players.
Yeah, but I think with
your foot doing that.
With the South American kind of like karate kick kind of moves, what you need is people having a push and a shove, maybe a couple of haymakers, and then from off camera, someone has to run in and do a karate kick at someone's head.
That's right.
That's how.
Romario did that once, did he?
I believe so.
I think it was Romario. He just comes out of the screen. It is like it's kung fu stuff.
Yeah. So for you, Pete, what makes a football fight? What classifies as a football fight?
I think someone has to theatrically go down, and then someone has to have put a headbutt on someone, I think.
Oh, a headbutt specifically?
So a theatrical fall, and then after that, a headbutt, I think, for a proper football fight for me.
For me, a blow has to be struck. Because as Andy said earlier there, pushing and shoving, it's like, no, there was nearly a fight. Because often we say, oh, there's a fight, and then, of course, there's different levels, and we'll get to this, but there's a brawl, or there's this, that, and the other. If there was, you know, if you said, oh, there was a brawl down the local Wetherspoons, you're thinking, right, windows done in, this is nasty. Whereas in football, in football, it's like a few people got a little bit of a push.
The bench has to get involved.
Can be a slap.
But I think if
unused subs for you, Pete.
Unused subs.
Yeah, they're getting
people
involved.
With bibs jumping over other people with bibs to get to people.
But if you hear, oh, there was a fight at this match, and then you tune into Match of the Day, what are you expecting? Because if there's a bit of pushing and shoving and all that, I think that's not a fight. Well, I think there has to be a blow.
I never understand why once that kind of part of the fight has reached where someone's swung.
Yeah.
I don't know why everybody doesn't just go for it. Because in your Wetherspoons, you don't know how long it's going to be before the police turn up. You could be dead by then, right? You could have your head through a window and your carotid artery broken up, right?
You don't have 50,000 people watching on the TV cameras.
Yeah, but on a field, it's always going to be broken up. So just go fucking wild.
And that's why they can't. And the players always know that at the back of their mind. Yeah. So like the difference between that, that's why the threshold is lower.
Yeah.
So would you ever go at Duncan Ferguson? You're like, it's going to be fine.
Well, I would use the example of like, I remember playing 11 side once down at near Highbury. And a fight broke out because fair play, our striker did punch the goalkeeper. Mm. What ensued was an 11-on-11 fight. And a lot of people chasing the man who'd done the swinging, little Aussie bloke. Mm. And it never really stopped because there wasn't a crowd, there wasn't police, there wasn't managers around to sort of stop. It never really stopped. And it just kind of like, it gassed out eventually, but it was a big fight that lasted about 15 minutes.
Yeah, and you obviously won't get that in football.
In a pro game, it's basically like being in
professional football. So.
It's basically like being in a ball pool in a soft play.
Yeah.
No, just roll about, enjoy yourselves, and it'll reach its natural conclusion.
It's the trampoline park,
Yeah. Well, go on, Luke.
I was going to say, I think so, you know, you're looking at some kind of, when it comes to football fights, you're looking at some kind of altercation where two come together and it starts to erupt into something bigger. Now, there are exceptions to that, but you know, for example, the as you've already mentioned in your intro, Marcus, the Dyer versus Batty thing.
Bowyer.
Bowyer.
Batty
was Lasso, wasn't
it?
That was a black man.
Uh-huh.
They're kind of quite rare.
Yes,
normally it's almost like everyone's getting involved ostensibly to look like they're defending their teammate, but ultimately they just don't want to be seen as a coward
because
they get stuck in.
Because you get a bit of a standoff. I think nowadays in football, you get a lot of standoffs and you might get the odd little push and stuff. Because if you think about like Roy Keane and Alan Shearer, when they kind of squared up, I don't think they even laid a hand on each other thing, you know. But you remember it because that's what we've got, because it's all so sanitised, Andy.
No, that's because Shearer was A, not scared of him, and B, did very well to avoid.
Well, and also we should say the game is actually quite professional, and though nobody who is heavily invested in a football club in a kind of commercial sense is wanting their players to be getting 10 bells knocked out of them.
That is true. I would say that my take home from that particular confrontation is, and it's a confrontation,
it's not a fight.
Yeah. Is that Alan Shearer is actually much harder than people would like to admit.
Oh, I think people would. I don't think anybody. I mean, the time he did what was the fancy dress party, Peter, at Newcastle? Was it Keith Gillespie? Alan Shearer had to kind of calm him down.
Well, Keith Gillespie was throwing, was it a beer mats or something? I think
was he doing a George Bridge? Yeah, he was doing the ashtray.
It was in Cafe and Sen in Dublin. Is that?
I think Dublin.
It was
in Dublin.
Yeah. I think it was. Yeah,
it's a long narrow bar. So after he was throwing, some cutlery. I think throwing some cutlery at the rest of the team.
That's naughty.
And Alan Shearer is the one who was getting angrier, and Keith Gillespie was like, "Yeah, I'm into this," because Alan's getting really angry, and so he kept on throwing it just at Alan Shearer. And so Alan Shearer said, right, outside. And Keith Gillespie said, from his autobiography, it's a long, narrow bar, so it's quite a walk to the front door. Proper, like, to the hangman's noose kind of thing. There was no discussion en route. I was mulling over my next move. We emerged onto a busy street where Sunday afternoon shoppers were going about their business. It didn't deter me from the battle plan. I took a swig at Shearer, but I was punch drunk and inaccurate. He responded with a blow that sent me flying backwards against a plant pot. I cracked my head and entered the blackout zone. One of my favourite zones, not my favourite zone.
I was going to suggest that. Well, go on, if you.
And then the next thing I remember was the view from the hospital bed.
Do you know what?
And it was a club sanctioned bonding session.
I was going to say that actually I didn't think it was a fight because I thought Shearer just hit him and that was that. But actually, the fact he took a swing, I think you can say
teammates fighting behind the scenes is epically cool.
We're going to knock your block off
because you don't see it.
Johnny Hartson and Al Berkovich.
That was in the training ground, obviously.
And that satisfies your thirst for kicks from footballers.
Well, Shearer did well, of course, to Neil Lennon as well.
That's not a fight, though. It's not. Isn't
it? Well, I don't think Hartson and Berkovich was a fight, was it?
No,
I think
it wasn't.
Berkovich was on the floor and Hartson kicked him in the face.
Yeah,
start a fight. We didn't see what happened afterwards, did we?
Well, yeah, normally it would start a fight, but Hartson sort of made sure it didn't go further than that.
I'd like to bring this one to the table, the fact that Roy Keane and Peter Schmeichel didn't like each other for years, and Peter Schmeichel just finally had enough of Keane, and they're at a hotel for an away game, forget which one. And Roy Keane said, the way Roy Keane tells it, and I haven't heard Peter Schmeichel's side of the story, is that Roy Keane was in Nicky Butt's hotel room and they were both having a club sandwich. And there was a knock at the door.
Nicky Butt is really hard as well.
Probably, yeah.
Apparently they say that.
Yeah, knock at the door. So Roy Keane answers it, and Peter Schmeichel's just, "I've had enough of you, Keane." And they have a big rumble in the hotel corridor. And Alex Ferguson, I think, finds out about it because one of them ends up with a black eye in training the next day. And neither of them have spoken much about it since.
Well, so. I love the fact that Schmeichel just sitting there mulling it over and going, today's the day.
When I worked at the zoo, two gigantic fucking tortoises, they'd lived together 45 years.
Yeah.
And then one morning, one of them just didn't have its head.
Yeah.
It just slowly, methodically gnawed the other one's head off.
Wow.
Because he just had the fucking...
Would you think it was
sick to the back tortoise teeth.
That's your story, just sticking to it, right?
Would you think maybe it was like a Shawshank Redemption sort of situation. He'd been gnawing away at it for years and then you hadn't noticed.
Let me tell you the real story. They've been living together for 45 years. Pete had been on that enclosure for a day. and the head of the zoo, whatever you call him, come up and said, "Pete, this has never happened before. What's going on?
Did you give him that penknife?"
They had an argument and one said, "All right, don't bite my head off." Yeah. And then I went, "Well, I will."
Yeah.
And that was the end of that. Well, our listeners seem to think that Kevin Keegan being involved is a key ingredient to a great football fight. Because we had a lot of suggestions from your good selves on Twitter. And the fight he had with Johnny Giles during the 1974 Charity Shield was the ultimate football fight.
This is slightly mischaracterised. It wasn't a fight with
it was
Johnny
a sort
Giles.
On Keegan.
Yeah, Johnny Giles had a go at him and then Keegan ended up having a fight with Billy Bremner and they were both sent off.
Yeah, but...
In the Charity Shield in the 70s.
Do you know what was
and
amazing?
Johnny Giles only got a yellow for punching him.
He did.
Keegan, and they both left the field shirtless.
But Keegan,
well, he did.
But Keegan actually, again, was it a fight or was Keegan assaulted twice? No. Because when Keegan walks off the field, he mouths, and you can see it, he goes to the ref, he calls him Bob Man or something. He goes, "Oh, come on, Bob Man." And he goes, "I've not done a goal, I've been hit twice." That is the best Keegan.
Can I add a bit to that, though, and say that if you look at the
the play and the build up to the incident, Keegan's massively putting it about.
Well, he is.
He comes in really late on a Leeds player. It might even be Bremner. Mm. And he goes further over and starts to have another. And it's almost a bit like he's a whirling dervish, like a Tasmanian devil.
Yeah.
Hitting everyone until he just comes up against Johnny Giles. And there's boom, and that's the end of that.
Do you know what, though? It's amazing. But that kind of thing, obviously, it stands out for a reason, because I think sometimes we think football in the 70s, there were all these fights all the time. There was definitely more of them, but they were still quite rare.
Well, there weren't cameras every ground, that's why.
No, true. But that type of fight or that type of blow, if you like, is incredibly rare nowadays in this country, to the point of I can't really kind of, one doesn't really leap to mind. I mean, you think of Duncan Ferguson sticking the head on whoever it was when he was... I'm pretty sure when he was playing for Rangers. Served time for it.
Was it Paul McStay? Jock McStay, not Paul McStay. Different player. But yeah, it was pretty severe.
Yeah. I was going to say, nobody would do that to old Paul McStay.
Yeah.
Come on. Although there was a great one between Rangers and Celtic in, I think, 1987 when Chris Woods was involved. Maybe Frank McAvenney.
Yeah, it was.
And there was a that was a fight.
Graham Roberts ended up
in goal.
Going in goal and conducting the orchestra.
Yes. But as we said earlier, there are different kind of categories of football fights. Gentlemen, the mass brawl. I'd like to be... And at what stage does a fight become a mass brawl? Why are they so special when they happen?
Well, I think the great thing about those type of incidents is that it starts from a very small acorn.
Oh, yeah.
And starts to bloom into a massive oak tree, and all of a sudden I think you get to a point, as I mentioned, I kind of alluded to earlier, where it almost becomes something about holding pride and not wanting to seem to be not be involved.
Tell you what, all joking aside, there is an element, if you like, of squeezing some sort of positivity. There's an element of team bonding.
Definitely. I remember I played for my
when I played
at Farnborough College.
Oh yeah.
We had a game away somewhere. It might have been against Reading or something. And we ended up staying out.
In the old League One?
Yeah, it wasn't Ready FC. We ended up going out the night before because we're at the university and that's kind of what you do. And obviously that was a stupid thing to do. But we had a couple of the fellas from the team had a bit of an altercation at a nightclub and it kind of spilled out into the car park. And people were involved in the way that a mass brawl is involved. It wasn't like a big... But not everyone was swinging punches. I think it was only like one or two punches thrown, but everyone was involved.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe at the time, and looking back at now, I probably think similar, that the camaraderie and the team spirit that was bonded actually meant something, because it meant like you look around and people are actually going to back you up. Even though that doesn't really mean anything in practice.
No, I
think managers will probably look at a mass brawl, although they'll get charged for not for failing to control their players and all that kind of stuff, a few fines here and there.
Yeah.
It's rare for
in terms of
to
team
be deductive.
Spirit,
it's probably quite a good thing.
Well, in terms of team spirit, as I say, there is a healthy element to it in terms of team spirit, you know, because that's what a manager would presumably want. I mean, you think about, I don't know, a classic case of a side really being together. Imagine if you're playing against Uruguay.
Yeah.
Right? Now, they're all quite hard anyway.
But that's part
you
of
you can imagine them all, exactly, all for one, one for all, right? If one goes, we all go.
Is that not part of their team identity, though, for a lot of it?
I would say so.
Because that goes back years, right?
Yeah.
That kind of thing goes back. The Argentina thing as well, like Angels with Dirty Faces, that kind of thing they talk about. They would see that as a kind of any way to get an advantage type thing, right?
Yes.
But to answer your question, I think when it becomes a mass brawl, it's the psychological element of like, it's very much easily identifiable sides against each other.
Yeah.
And the whole thing can spill over.
But how many people? I think you've got to have like more than like seven or eight. I think you've maybe got to get into...
Yeah, I think for it to be a mass brawl,
double figures.
Maybe you can have one goalkeeper not involved.
Oh yeah, the goalkeeper's got to get involved.
Do you know what's leapt to mind is that? Do you remember when Real Madrid and Barcelona played each other about 18 times in 2 weeks?
Yes. Yeah.
When Mourinho was in charge.
And Villanova.
The late Villanova. Yeah. Mourinho, little finger in the eye. Do you remember that? That was peak Mourinho when they were all at it. That all came from Marcelo, I think it was, who got a red.
Yes. Do you think the coaches have to be involved for it to be a mass brawl?
I want the coaches involved. Yeah. I want the coaches involved.
Pete said benches for a start, didn't he?
Yeah, benches have to get involved. Yeah.
The benches, you've got to have subs. Definitely unused subs, as you say.
On the Mourinho thing, can be quite small, can't it?
On the Mourinho thing, when Mourinho does that to Tito Villanova,
it's so...
But is that calculated? Do you think he just lost it?
No, it's calculated.
I think it's calculated, yeah.
You think?
Yeah, because I watched it the other day and I thought to myself, the way he kind of strolls up, he's got plenty of time to do that. He doesn't run over. He doesn't do the Mourinho, you know, like wild celebration. Right, I'm getting stuck in. Like that meme when he's on the bench at Spurs. There's none of that. There's very much... Where's my target? There it is. Righto. That's me. Thank you very much. Boop. I'll retreat behind the biggest player.
Would you say to creep up behind someone so they don't know you're there, reach around, poke them in the eye and then run away? It's quite honourable way of doing it.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. It's a fair fight.
The main problem that stops a good football fight is that people go down too easy.
Nowadays,
it takes two to tango, right?
Do you think that Athletic Bilbao player that Maradona? No, it's not even a player. Is it a physio or something? Yeah. Yeah. He goes down a bit easier when Maradona clearly knocks him out with a knee to the head. That is mental.
Yeah,
that is absolutely crazy.
That's mental because back in 1986 when Maradona's playing for Barcelona,
and he gets the treatment during the game.
84 is it? Okay, ooh, and he gets mid-80s, whatever, and he gets a lot of treatment from the, obviously that they've targeted him and all the rest of it because, you know, they know he's the best player in the world and all that kind of stuff, and he just snaps.
Yeah,
but then that's
the reason, double legs.
Oh,
it?
Man.
Yeah, but the thing about that is really interesting thing about that, and maybe Brassel knows more about it, is that for a while it looks like it's just Diego against them on his own. But no one really backs him up. Like,
it took a while to get them there. Yeah, is he that quick and jinky? Maybe even his own team.
Maybe they're just quite far away.
But then if you created like a football sort of Marvel hero and he had to do like football moves to beat off his opponents or whatever, you know, so to speak, then that Maradona, that as you say, the flick of the knee, it would be stuff like that,
well,
wouldn't
it's the thing that I like about that fight is that almost every Bilbao player tries to do a karate kick and then falls right in his back.
They've never done one before.
Yeah. They can't sort of foul them out and do it properly.
But what you were saying, Luke, before about the difference between premeditated, or was it you, Marcus, when you were talking about the difference between premeditated and losing it, I think what makes this an absolute classic of the genre is there's both with Maradona in this. Because You look at all the factors. The fact that Andoni Goycochea absolutely snapped his ankle into various bits earlier in the season.
Oh, in the season, okay.
Yeah.
So he recovered pretty quickly from that then.
And it was a horrible injury.
Yeah. Mm.
And so there's the fact of that. There's the fact that they've lost. There's the fact that he has beef with Athletic in general. Mm-hmm. There's also the fact that he kind of knows he's leaving because it's his last game for Barcelona before he goes off to Napoli. So all those things, I think there's something that he's been seething on for a while, and the fact that he's combusting under the situation at the
Well, I think when you have all that, you have a sort of a history, as you say, it's sort of bubbling up. I mean, I think one of the ultimate examples of this was it dubbed the Match of Hate or something when Egypt played Algeria. Mm. There's been so many matches between those two with such needle. I forget which year. I'm tempted to say it was 1989, qualified for the 1990 World Cup, but forgive me if that's wrong. But that is mad. Like somebody, one of the coaches, I think, lost sight in one eye.
Bloody hell.
That's how mad it was. But there was the players, they were chucking plant pots into the crowd because there was like some sort of elaborate kind of interior design or decor that was in the stadium. Yeah. It was absolutely crazy. But another one, though, speaking of pre-World Cup, Jamaica played a friendly match against Toros Neza, who, like a lower league Mexico.
I've seen this, yeah.
And you can see this on YouTube. It's absolutely mad. They were playing them in a friendly before they played against Mexico in a World Cup qualifier. Of course, Jamaica qualified for the 98 World Cup quite famously. Yeah. And Torres Neza, they'd already been complaining that Jamaicans were playing quite dirty and they were trying to provoke them. To which the Jamaica coach said, well, we just simply lacked international experience. You're playing a low in league. Yeah. But it had it all. The fans got involved as well. Like everybody was just piling in. It is absolutely crazy. But you do see some of the old fly kicks in that one. Which is something that you know, do we like to see? I don't know, but how does a melee differ to a mass brawl?
So a melee, I think, is smaller. It's over quicker. A melee is just like a skirmish,
less
really.
Structured.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Nobody's losing eyes and being unconscious.
I don't want anyone to be unconscious or lose an eye. Generally.
No, I was going to say we joke about these things, but like that is obviously
the way I approach with football fights is the way I approach things as a boxing fan. You know, I want to see a great fight. I don't want to see anyone get hurt.
Absolutely.
You know
right.
what I mean? It's a different thing.
Chelsea v Spurs 2016.
That's a great one, and that's a great example, chiefly because when we started talking about it. What do you want to see in a game? So when I'm watching a game and I've got no kind of dog in the fight and it's not a game of a team I support or whatever, I want to see great goals and I want to see a great game first and foremost. After that, if I'm being totally honest, I want to see probably a red card, right? And after that, I want to see some kind of fight. Mm. And if I can have a combination of both, I would be very, very happy indeed. The only exception to that would probably be seeing an outrageous piece of skill that everyone could come and really enjoy. But the Battle of the Bridge was amazing because it had everything, because the stakes were high. Spurs are still in the hunt for the Premier League.
It's a bit of a derby game.
It's a derby game anyway. And Chelsea had this kind of shocking season, but we knew they were still really good. And it went, I mean, because there was an element, because by the time the fight had happened, hadn't Spurs basically lost the game? They were going to miss out, basically. The opportunity had gone, and obviously they didn't know if they were going to get another one. And the great thing about it was that even Pochettino got involved.
I could imagine Poch getting involved.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
It was great to watch. It started off with a Danny Rose tackle that people were pissed off about, didn't
they? Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And then the whole thing kind of escalated.
Moussa Dembélé, they were talking of eye gouges on Costa.
He had a go at Costa, didn't he? Yeah.
Oh,
but I remember Diego, so obviously this won't be surprising to people listening. But I remember Diego Costa being involved in one against Everton as well. He started a big old ruck for Chelsea against Everton back in the day. He was the kind of guy that just follows him wherever he goes, right? Yeah.
I imagine Pochettino is that type of manager who, obviously, the result didn't go their way that night because Leicester were handed the title. But I think Pochettino would get everybody involved and go.
But when Pochettino gets involved,
I reckon he would be like, "Well done, lads. That's what I want to see from you."
Well, I think I don't think there's even a comment. I think it's like your dad going, "Get in the car. I'll deal with this." That's what it is.
Yeah, true enough. Well, okay. So, what about another category of football fight? It's managers fighting.
Yeah, this is a very rare beast, an enjoyable one. It's like a hen's tooth, that. That's great to see.
I think the interesting thing is...
It's like fucking finding oil at the bottom of your garden.
Alan Pardew is a willing participant, but not necessarily as skilled a participant as he would like to be.
So are you talking about the headbutt? So Jimmy on Twitter asked, Pardew headbutting Myler, does that count as a fight? So with regards to the rareness of managers fighting, certainly in this country, I'm not sure that does count as a fight.
It was
a head brush, it wasn't a head.
It was an unseemly initiative.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think there, like, Myler's so, like, shocked by it.
Yeah.
You know, he has no way of being a participant. I mean, Pardew's kind of got form for this, because if you go back a couple of years and you have that touchline confrontation, I do say confrontation, between him and Arsene Wenger, and he thinks, I'll have a French lead along the touchline. Yeah. And he goes up to him, and then he has the experience that everyone meeting Arsene Wenger has, where
he's
like, shit, he's really tall.
Yeah. And then, he looks like he'd be able to look after himself more.
Absolutely. And Wenger gives him a push back.
Yes, I remember that as well.
And you think Pardew gets there and he's like, actually, I'm way out of my depth here.
I think Wenger almost did Pardew a solid by pushing him, because Pardew can then get all outraged by it, you know, rather than going, I've sort of done a Keith Gillespie here. I've walked to the end of the bar and thought, crap. How do I get out of here without being, you know, knocked to the floor?
That was because the Pellegrini thing and the Myler thing were both when Pardew was coming to the end of his Newcastle tenure, right? 2014. Yeah. And I think it's interesting because Pardew was obviously known as a bit, they call him Chocolado, don't they? Like, he would lick himself if he had a chance.
That's right.
And I've seen him, I've seen the man in the wild, and he is a cunt. And like, January 2014 is the kind of trigger event for what we see with Myler, which is in March, I think. In the January, he has a big altercation with Pellegrini, and he doesn't become physical because for whatever reason. But then in March is when he has the Myler thing, and you could just see it, like, he's just becoming more and more full of himself until the Myler thing. And, you know, he always had that in him, the old dance for when he was at Palace and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But you don't, you've got Mourinho against Villanova, you've got Pardew. The Pardew Myler thing was over a throw-in, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, it's not even actually because manager.
Was a player, right? Exactly.
Yeah, totally. So, what about, I mean, Tuchel and Conte, not that recently had a little
handshake. Handshake.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
See, that's as good as it gets. You're right, hen's tooth.
All this thing comes back to the threshold in the football world is far lower. Like, in the real world, you would see the thing that happened between Tuchel and Conte. Obviously, people aren't shaking hands on the tube.
No.
But on the London Underground, every day, that stuff happened.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We've mentioned this, but teammates fighting.
That's great.
Yeah. How many times have you and I had to separate Jim and Pete?
Pete, nothing will give you more joy than two players in the same team, because no one knows how to deal with it.
And no one knows how deep this runs or how badly it'll go in the future. You see it all the time on the training ground, but just when you see it in front of so many people, it's magnificent.
Well, listen,
but they're on a level, aren't they? That's the difference. Where you've got a coach getting involved, no one expects that. It's when, like, Luis Felipe Scolari was Portugal coach and he attacked Dragutinovic on the touchline, actually threw a punch at him.
Fucking hell.
And, he literally just, like, took a swing at him. And it's absolutely huge. Yeah. And, like, they asked Scolari about it afterwards. And he sat there and he said it was because he was having a go at Ricardo Quaresma. And he goes, I was just defending my boy, which is the ultimate post-fight speak, as it goes. That's exactly what people say. And, you know, the interview is there going, You did do it. He was saying, I didn't hit him. It's like, literally, the whole stadium has seen you hit him, plus millions of viewers on television, and we have it on high-definition tape. And he's like, I didn't. I was just defending my boy.
Well, he's brought in the Shaggy rule. Just say it wasn't you. caught me on camera. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, listener Dave got in touch, mentioned Batty and Lasso, and he said, it'll always be my favourite fight. I remember listening to that on the radio as a kid. I mean, imagine hearing that on the radio, the imagination. But interestingly, David Batty said of the incident, I hit the deck, and as I got up, he came at me very aggressively. He was being threatening and screaming about Lasso, obviously. And Batty said hitting him was more of a preemptive strike than anything. I swung, connected, and knew immediately that I had broken my left hand. I am not a fighter. I never thought David Batty would say that.
Yeah.
I hadn't closed my fist properly. I was in a lot of pain, which made me fall.
That is a lot of cheek from David Batty.
Well, but we move on to Bowyer versus Dyer.
Well, can I just say before you move on, I've worked with Graham Lasso, and he's the loveliest man, the gentlest guy. There's no way you can take Batty be Lasso and Batty go, well, it's a preemptive strike. I was worried for my safety.
Yeah, but Lasso did have a temper.
Yeah, but fine. But yeah, I mean,
that's true.
Yeah. Well, Bowyer versus Dyer, in the same game that Taylor went down pretending he'd got hit. Amazing. What an afternoon.
Yeah.
That was at St. James's. But yeah, Dyer described the incident as in his autobiography and said, I could see him marching towards me, eyes bulging. Yes. I mean, Luke, you described it once as Lee Bowyer's face looked like a clenched fist.
That was by far the best. Those two is by far the best. There's a load of reasons, and I'll go through them very quickly, right?
Torn shirt.
The torn shirt's great.
Yeah.
Yes. Bowyer's torn shirt. One, because all the details that came out afterwards, like they're just gone 3-0 down to Aston Villa.
Right.
And apparently the thing that started it is that when they were going to take the kickoff again, Bowyer screamed at Dyer, you need to stop passing me the ball because I need the ball. This is why this is happening, kind of thing. And apparently Dyer screamed back at it, and the reason I don't pass you the ball is because you're fucking shit.
Oh.
And that's when it all started. But the best thing about it was Gareth Barry has to break it up, which is not what he thought was going to go
no,
on.
No.
And then Graham Souness makes him do this mad apology
at
a press conference.
With the tea lady.
Yeah, despite admitting later on that the first thing he wanted to do was fight them himself, right? Which is an amazing amount of sanctimony.
Yeah.
And then the story that was talked about afterwards was that... I think it was Kieran Dyer said in an interview afterwards that he was really nervous about what was going to happen in the dressing room because they'd obviously both been sent off, right? And the players come down the tunnel after the final whistle and he can hear the studs coming down the corridor.
Yeah.
And he said that he had one player running much faster than the other and he's like, oh, fucking hell, who is it kind of thing? Because we've really let everyone down. Apparently it was Jean-Alain Boumsong who just turned up and just went, who can't even speak English that well, just went, you want to fight? Fight now! Trying to get him to fight again.
Amazing.
No, I can one up you on that. The best thing for me for that was when the fight's starting to kick off, Shaw's got the ball and he passes it to Alan Shearer, and Alan Shearer just doesn't accept the pass because he's running up. He just goes, sorry, Sean, I am fucking hard and there's a fight happening.
Yeah.
Well, apparently after the boost, I think it was Dyer or Bowie, one of them said, when Shearer came in, everyone was like schoolboys. Like he was fucking raging. Mm.
I like also that Dyer said that as Bowie is going towards him, Graham Souness was shouting, "Don't do it!" from the top.
Don't do it.
So he's like at the end of a film, and he's got a gun pointed. Yeah. You know, don't do it. I'll do it, not you. Oh dear. But teammates fight. I mean, again though, that where the fight takes place. Because we said earlier in the training ground and all this kind of stuff. I mean, as Dyer himself says, he said, I couldn't believe he was hitting me in front of 52,000 people.
It's a mad thing.
It is a mad thing. Although, as you said, sometimes it happens in hotels. John Arnorisa knows what we're talking about. Craig Bellamy burst into his room at the golf club, which was mad. Neil suggested that one. Thank you, Neil.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it is extraordinary.
The celebration that followed when he scored against Barcelona the next day, Bellamy.
Yeah,
I mean the sheer like unapologeticness of it.
Yeah, I think that's
incredible.
That's potentially where it boils over into being quite problematic.
I mean, I know what you mean.
You can't be fucking tearing into people's rooms with weapons.
You know, so you draw the line
at
there.
Night. Yeah. You know,
before
we get, I know
you've got to be able to see the weapon.
Yeah, I know we want to talk about. I know we want to talk about the old the Battle of the Buffet in 2004 as well.
Well, we can mention it.
Before we come on to that, I just wanted to, because Pete and I chat sometimes about the idea that there was a period of time after the internet was invented where it was kind of like the Wild West. And it was very exciting, and it was less sanitized than it is now, and it's very corporate now. Obviously, the internet. I wonder if the same is true about the Premier League, because these things
definitely.
All happened probably around, 2004, 2005, where the league is really popular. It's gaining that kind of worldwide presence, but it's not quite the massive, all-conquering behemoth that it is now.
Yeah.
And there was a lot more room for this kind of behaviour. And it's kind of the way people talk about, you know, the characters in the game and all this kind of stuff, and maybe there's not much room for that now. I think back then there probably still was just about room for it, and that's probably why you don't see it as much anymore.
I think often people bemoan the fact that players move just for money and so on, and I think there's always been an element of that, and I don't begrudge anybody that type of thing. But certainly back in the day, I think players felt more synonymous with their clubs, and they would be at clubs longer maybe, and it was a little bit more local perhaps. Maybe those things come into play. For some people, perhaps, not others. Clearly for Cesc Fabregas, he's not from North London.
Well, I think Dyer and Bowyer both did move to Newcastle for quite a lot of money.
Yeah. No, but they did. But I mean, Fabregas still thought, you know, chuck a slice of pizza at Alex Ferguson, that'll help the situation.
That's funny, because that came out later. People didn't know who it was for ages, did they?
Yeah, I thought it was Van Persie for years, I think.
There was talk that... There was talk that Ferguson had been on the end of a pepperoni slice to the
face.
Yeah. And then later on, to be fair to Cesc Fabregas, later on he came out saying that he was tired and he was pissed off because they lost their unbeaten run, but he didn't want to have a fight. He said himself, maybe I lacked the courage, so threw a slice of pizza instead.
I guess the thing is, it's probably like a bit of thin crust, whereas if it had been calzone, that would have been a declaration of war.
Or a Chicago deep dish.
Napalm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, so if you're hot. Sort of like, for Alex Ferguson, you want a pairing wine, wouldn't he?
Go back. Hang on, I'll just go and get me Chianti. You come back.
Well, there we are, gentlemen. It's an area of football that we do enjoy, it's fair to say.
Have a fight.
Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us for another Football Ramble Guide 2. Remember, we want your ideas for what to talk about next. We've had loads so far. Thank you very much for them. We're working through our favourites as the season goes on. If you fancy learning more about one of football's quirks or grand old traditions, then get in touch with us. Email show@footballramble.com or tweet us at Football Ramble with your suggestions. See you next time.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.